Desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, as the case may be across the globe, since we cover every single time zone on the net or with one of our 500 plus affiliates. Welcome. Great to be with you this evening. A lot of ground to cover tonight. In the second hour, this should be really interesting. We're going to kind of frog around a little bit with the program. And that is to say, we're obviously going to continue to cover the events of September 11th, but we're also going to begin to inject some of our regular guests and regular subjects, and this will be one of those nights. Ralph Sarchi is a sergeant with the New York Police Department, currently working with the 46th Precinct in the South Bronx. While we will no doubt elicit some comments on what occurred September 11th, mainly, this man is here to talk about demonology, exorcisms. As a matter of fact, he's a close confidant of the late Father Malachi Martin. He's a devout Catholic, and boy, does he have a lot to say. So he'll be here in the second hour. Right now, you cannot get XM radios. I don't know if I should really say that. There may be a way, but everybody I know is trying like crazy and can't get their hands on one. So we're there if you happen to be one of the elite few who has a radio. Anyway, we are on XM right now. The Bush administration today said that some of the same terrorists involved in the September 11th attacks on New York and Washington also now have been linked to the East Africa embassy bombings and the attack on the USS Coles. Matter of fact, the administration has briefed the president of Pakistan, and everybody is saying, including the Brits, that the proof is now proof positive. It was Osama bin Laden who did it. Proof positive. Compelling, impossible to not believe proof. I have yet to see it. I'm sure most of you have yet to see it, but that is what they're saying. The president of Pakistan was given a private viewing. And by the way, you might want to go to my website if you want to have some warmongering fun. You can go to my website, and when you get there, click on What's New, and then up at the top, instead of going down, you go up, and you'll see it says Listener Feedback, News and Other Websites. Click on News and Other Websites, and the third item down is Bin Laden Liquors, the game. Got a flash for that. So you might want to give that a try. It's a lot of fun and puts you in the right mood. There is a story about some instant messages that were sent to Israel. A link I sent to Keith, and you might want to read about that. Instant messages being regarded by the authorities in Israel as a two-hour warning ahead of time before the attacks on 9/11. So there's a lot up there. Those two things, number two and number three, you might want to take a look at. Bin Laden Liquors, you're going to like. It gives a body a great deal of satisfaction. It's kind of bloodthirsty, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I mean, what can you say? Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld leaving tonight on a four-nation mission that could, they say, be a prelude to military strikes against terrorists. Rumsfeld is going to hold talks with leaders in Saudi Arabia, Oman, Egypt, and Uzbekistan. All key members of the president's growing coalition against terrorism. So this could be, they're speculating, kind of a final round of, well, here we go, folks, are you with us or against us? And meanwhile, the killing goes on in Israel. Two Israelis killed in a Gaza attack, yet another in the long string of never-ending attacks there. Senate and Justice Department negotiators failed today to reach a final compromise on the administration's anti-terrorism package one day after House leaders announced their package was ready for passage. Now let's see, what else do we know tonight? Well, quite a bit, actually. I am proceeding really hard with this whole Princeton thing. Now, Princeton is using a whole bunch of computers generating random number generators, and they have been looking at world scale events for some time now, kind of like a Richter scale of the group consciousness out there. Maybe you could call it that, a Richter scale of the group consciousness. You see, for some reason, these random number generators started becoming much less random. At 6 o'clock in the morning before the attack, then right as the attack occurred, big spike, then afterwards it continued to spike. Some are considering this proof positive that random number generators are being affected by the larger mass consciousness out there. Then I received this really interesting email from a young lady in the Bay Area, Sandra. And Sandra has been doing some interesting work, and she's really shocked. She's a paramedic for the San Francisco Fire Department, but she has a hobby, and I guess it's speech. And what Sandra did was to begin to feed a nonsense, basically nonsense, into a random number generator. In other words, speech. What did she use? She used Sesame Street, I think. She used a news show on CNN, which talked largely about stem cell research, Chandra Levy and Lizzie Grubman, a bunch of stuff. And then submits it to a random number generator. This is so interesting in view of Princeton. Anyway, what comes out on the other end is coherent speech. Things like missiles head for New York City at dusk, and many more messages that are pretty bone-chilling. Now, why would that come out, be spit out of a random number generator, unless that random number generator were being affected by the group consciousness? All this done, by the way, before the attacks on the World Trade Center. Pretty doggone weird stuff, wouldn't you say? I certainly would. So we're going to follow this. And tomorrow night, Richard C. Hoagland may have some more for you. Certainly a catch-up report on what's going on at Princeton. He's working very hard on it right now. Well, I'll tell you, I've got a lot more information here for you of varying sorts, but I think I'm going to hold it and disperse it as the program continues tonight. What a fascinating time we're in. First-time caller line, you would have been on the air. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, sir. This is Dean calling from Tampa, Florida.
Hi, Dean.
How are you doing tonight, sir?
All right.
One thing I'd like to ask you, sir, is what do you think how the role the media has played in far as the almost the fear effect? Because one thing I noticed, like even before Y2K, I can remember NBC put out a movie regarding the whole Y2K fear and things like that, and even a plane played in a factor in that. And then you see with like current news magazine programs, you almost see where they start going piece by piece what targets in America people could go for. And to me, it almost seems like it's an instruction book. And it almost plays into the whole part of it. It's hard to actually get back to a normal,
First of all, don't worry about the media instructing the terrorists. The terrorists are far ahead of the media.
Oh, exactly.
So I'm not worried about that. In terms of speculation about targets, well, it's inevitable. I mean, where do you live?
I'm sorry?
Where do you live?
Tampa, right next to MacDill Air Force Base,
yeah,
which is
Tampa.
A very ground base for a lot of action as far as Middle East their part. In fact, it was where the Gulf War actually started to come out of.
Any of us right now, I think, in medium to large-sized cities, have got to consider the possibility.
Do you think we're prepared for like that? Because one thing I looked into
no.
a couple years ago, as far as even the biological part of it, there's very few hospitals that are actually prepared.
No, I don't think we're prepared. The government is sending people forth to tell everybody that we're prepared, but I don't believe it for a second.
One last thing, sir?
Yes.
The economic stimulus stimulus type package that we keep hearing about. One thing we've bailed out the airlines for just a moment with a $15 billion, but the one thing we've seen with the economy, I think, not only have we lost so many lives and we've hurt so many people, but yet I think by just allowing this to just for our whole economy and so many people losing their jobs, to me that seems like such a ripple effect that if the government can't do something about that, it almost seems like this will play out. And I think that's one of the more important things we need to do is get our foundation back. And then we can put up the walls for shelter instead of dividing us and actually start building that foundation back.
You're right about that. Thank you very much. Boy, he is dead right about that, too. The ripple effect from this is staggering. Staggering. Forget about the market. That's, of course, one indicator. But Main Street is the other indicator. Right now, the malls in big cities, mom and pop stores in malls in big cities, are suffering, may go out of business. People, make no mistake about it, have chosen to stay home. They're not flying. This has been a big shock to them. So to that degree, the terrorists, I suppose, have achieved their aim. People are a little scared, and can you blame them? However, life eventually does go on, and I'm not sure how long it's going to take. Certainly, it's taking longer than the authorities want right now for people to get back out and begin doing what they do every day. You know, flying, buying stuff, shopping, doing what people do. Well, they're not doing it right now, and they haven't started again yet. Much as everybody wants to get back to what they call normal, it's not normal yet. But it will be. It's just not yet. I'm watching it very closely, and if you listen to what the authorities are saying, they are scared. They're scared that habits have somehow immediately changed, and our base economy is at risk. No question about it. Maybe soon. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Is this Art?
Yes.
Art, this is Dave from Richfield, Minnesota.
Hello, Dave.
I think I'm the one that sent you that Ben Lawton thing.
Well, I think probably a number of people did. You mean Bin Laden Liquors?
Yeah.
Yeah, a number of, it's like a lot of other things. Oh, did you happen to see CNN earlier tonight? They ran a story on all of the hoaxes. And the guy sitting on the supposed observation deck at the World Trade Center with the airplane coming, that was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And a number of other internet hoaxes that they, thank God, thank you, CNN, just bashed them down.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully people will stop sending that out.
There was this other one that I sent you. It was called The Croc Hunter. It was about Bin Laden. You know, when the Croc Hunter goes out and catches Bin Laden and...
I haven't seen it yet. No, I haven't seen it. I'll look for it in my email. I'm getting so much email, you wouldn't believe.
Okay, that's basically a WAVE.
A WAVE file?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll watch for it.
It's hilarious.
All right, sir.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, and take care. This Bin Laden Liquors is great. Again, how to get to it, you go to rfl.com. Watch will crash their website. Go to rfl.com. In fact, let me check now and see if it's still up. When you get there, just click on What's New and go up to News and Other Websites. I think it's the third item down right now. It's called Bin Laden Liquors, The Game. Let me click on it and see if I can get there. Yeah, I can get there. You've really got to see this. It is an absolute warmongering riot. You're going to like it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, I wanted to talk to Art.
That would be me. Turn your radio off. And
I just did. I apologize, Art.
That's all right.
Yeah, you had commented just a minute ago with regards to the Fed cutting the interest rate.
Oh, yes, another 50 basis points.
Yes, sir. I was listening to that today, and they made the comment that the interest rate was down now to 2.5%.
It's below the rate of inflation.
Huh. Yes, sir. I have a hard time understanding, then, why we can't get mortgage rates down that low. What's the scoop there? Is that really, in fact, the rate of return that our money is getting in the bank? Or who's pulling the wool over whose eyes here?
Well, of course, the banks will adjust, and some will be a little higher, and some will be a little lower.
But
you know, they offer what they want to offer, but pretty much that's it. I mean, if you have money and you're depending on living on interest from your money, you're probably in dire straits right now because they're There isn't much there, sir.
Yes, sir. So it really doesn't affect the general public at large. It's just how low the rates are for banks to borrow money from the Fed?
Oh no, it does affect the general public. Now, you're right. It doesn't affect mortgage rates very quickly. And I don't know what to tell you about that. I know mortgage rates remain high and don't fall in sync with what Mr. Greenspan does. I can't explain that.
Yes, sir. Well, perhaps maybe some of the listeners can comment on that, because I'm kind of confused with that as well. I mean, they're blasting it all over, you know, the radio as well as the TV. And, you know, like so many other people in this country, I'm an entrepreneur trying to make a living myself, and it doesn't do me a darn bit of good, and I don't know anybody else that it does any good.
Mm-hmm.
I'll listen offline.
All right. Interest rates will eventually follow. Not right on down to that rate, but they will eventually follow in taking a dip. And because they have fallen, more people are buying homes. Look at the new home rate and the sales rate for used homes. It's, you know, through the roof, which is pretty good. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How are you?
I'm all right.
WRKO Radio, Boston.
Yes, sir.
Joe, and I heard your commercial, and they bleeped you out.
What commercial?
About the satellite.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I don't think.
Oh,
it was
well.
I think that was your network. It wasn't our station, because it came in. I know where it is. The new radio, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Talk about the terrorism, and I was very disheartened. I like the Canadians' approach to it. Now they're going to put steel doors so that...
I heard steel... The airline said steel bars.
Well, steel bars and then reinforcement.
Yep.
And the pilot said, well, the passengers make it... A bunch of them make it hurt, but rather them get hurt than... I agree, you don't have to run into buildings, but instead of doing that, they all should be trained how to defend themselves. And you can have good doors, but I don't think those men should be isolated, because my friend that went to the airport...
Oh, I do.
My friend went to the airport. He said it looks like a boot camp. Ask the Canadians how they deal with it. They had a whole thing on CBC.
Yeah, the Canadians asked the Israelis.
Yeah, but we don't have to get that way, Art. Come on.
Oh, yes, we do. And yes, we do. And putting bars on the doors, actually making the door and the bulkhead there bulletproof, seems like a really good idea to me. And there's going to be a lot of different messages go out now. I think that in a lot of cases... they may not recommend, but they're not going to be dissatisfied if the passengers rush the hijackers, because there are many more passengers than there are hijackers, usually, right? So they're outnumbered, which is one reason, no doubt, the hijackers wanted to keep the number on those four planes low, just in case there was something like that. Makes sense, right? Not to save lives, just so that they wouldn't get jumped by too many people. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, how are you?
Okay, sir.
Scott, I'm calling from Salt Lake City.
Right.
I just had a couple of comments at some of the other calls that were placed earlier. The
yes.
One gentleman had questions about the interest rates and how that will kind of affect the average American. I work for a large financial company. And the interest rates in regard to, let's say, home loans or mortgages.
Right.
If you have a fixed mortgage, it won't really affect you because your rate's already been locked in. You could refinance and get a lower rate. But
well, maybe he was talking about mortgage rates being offered right now as compared to the base rate.
Yeah, and I've looked at those too, because I'm looking at buying a home myself right now.
Wait a little bit. The mortgage rates follow, generally not all the way down, but they follow in dips, you know, after a month or two after the Fed has acted.
Yeah, and most companies right now are taking the position that they're kind of holding back to see how consumer confidence, or if anything, actually swings back into play. Like,
yeah,
the market
not very much out there right now.
No. And then your last caller, I was just listening to the gentleman from Boston. I spent a lot of time in the Marine Corps. I spent years in the Marine Corps.
Listen, I'll tell you what. You want to hold through the break. Just stay right there, all right?
Perfect.
Okay. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down.
west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may recharge at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to recharge on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It certainly is. Good morning to you all. It's great to be here. We're talking about the September 11th tragedy. Terrorism, if you will. This is not Reuters. And a whole lot more. So anything you want to talk about is fair game. We've got a gentleman waiting. He'll be right back. By the way, in CNN's properly debunking some of this internet junk that's been running around, they did refer to the, in fact, they showed the devil in the smoke photograph, and there's no debunking to be done because even as CNN pointed out, these were unretouched photographs. Now, as I said last night, I'll say again, now you can imagine that people will see what they will see in anything. However, I tell you, go test yourself. Look at the photographs on my website. They're unretouched. There's no question about it. It jumps right out at you. There is a face of the devil in that smoke. It's not something you have to stare at to see or wonder about. It's just there. Kaboosh, like that. It's there. I mean, it hits you right between the eyes. Maybe it was meant to, if you believe that. Sir, you're back on the air again. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, Art. Yeah, I was just going to continue with my comment. I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps, and in that time I was in a lot of different places and trained with some other national forces, the Australians, the Canadians. I even had some dealings with some Israeli advisors. A lot of people in America don't understand the security situations or the protocols that are put into place in other countries. I went to Europe after high school in the early 1990s, and I was just in awe in Frankfurt as to German National Police walking through the airport with machine guns and dogs.
You see it all over the world. It's not just here. South America, Asia, go to China. It looks like a submachine gun manufacturing plant. So.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere. And in American airports, you don't see that. So, and now you have people, there's some people that are criticizing, saying that, well, we're going to lose a lot of our civil liberties, a lot of our freedoms. If we want to play on the international stage in respect to security with travel and everything, I think everybody should be on the same page.
On the other hand, think about this, sir. Have you ever been to Israel?
No, I have not.
Well, I have. And in Israel, it makes all we've just talked about pale by comparison. Every guy and his dog has a submachine gun. They all have. And they're getting hit with terror almost daily. Just a thought. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Just a thought. All the guns in the world don't seem to be able to prevent it there. I don't really know what the answer to terrorism is. I suspect it's what we're about to do. Just go pound the crap out of them. You know, that's what Israel does, and yet they still suffer it. So, I don't know. Two ways to look at it, I guess. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you?
Tim from Buffalo, New York. This is you on WBEN 9:30 a.m.
All right. Tim, how come you sent your quarterback to San Diego? That was a dumb thing to do.
No comment.
All
hey,
right.
Art, I was trying to get a hold of you for, like, last week. I just couldn't get through. I was listening to all the anti-war and all the pacifism that was coming over that you were picking up from the Internet and the calls.
Oh, it's getting rampant out there.
I was just sitting here being fried about it. What I wanted to comment about was the lady that answered the phone from the Flight 93, the wife of the gentleman that called there.
Yes, yes.
I just can't get that out of my mind.
I never will.
And, you know, I wish these people would just think that, you know, I would go, I'm 47, I would go off to the service if I had to, or while I'll stay here and defend the country. You need to do it. They should have the attitude to do it for them. And all those thousands and, you know, there's kids left behind and all that. You know, just listening when you were making comments about the people, you know, not going to war and all this stuff.
Yes.
We were attacked. The United States was hit. And I just want to get out and just voice my opinion.
To me, it's a complete no-brainer. You destroy buildings in New York, you kill thousands of Americans, you destroy part of the Pentagon, you die.
That's it.
Yeah, that's that. I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you. You die. Whoever did that dies. Summary, removal from planet with prejudice. On to face whoever's next. Well, to me, there's no question about it. Period. A wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello? Yeah, how you doing tonight?
All right. Oh, what kind of phone are you on?
I'm on a cell phone.
Okay.
Is that better?
Well, with cell phones, there's rarely better. There's only different. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Well, my first comment was about, I don't know if anybody's brought it up. I just got you on, about the pilot safety and, you know, as far as the cockpit goes.
Sure.
I have friends that are commercial pilots, and in their mind, they know when they get in that airplane that if it goes down, they're the first ones to see it hit the ground.
That's right.
So their consensus, along with carrying arms, I mean, carrying arms is one thing, but their consensus is make the cockpit a tight, secure area with a vault-type door.
That's what I think.
Because there's nobody that needs to get in there besides, you know, two-way radio use from the steward or ground crew or whatever.
They need a dumbwaiter or something for coffee.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, a door or something. But, I mean, if somebody gets on the airplane with a bomb, that's a different story. But, you know, terrorism years ago, you know, when you hijack an airplane, you just wanted to go someplace for a free ride. Now,
that's right. It's all different now. And until recently, you know, the flight crew was always trained to cooperate, to try to get on the ground as quickly as they could and go, you know, to do what they had to do. Now everything has changed.
Yeah.
Everything.
I don't know what the answer is, but as the last caller said, you know, I went into Frankfurt myself too, and my wife went out of Vegas. I know, I think you used to live over the hump. I'm not sure if you're up there or not anymore,
sorry.
But my wife went out of Vegas last Friday night down to Florida, mm-hmm. and with two of my daughters, both my daughters, and, you know, my daughter's 2 years old, one daughter's 8 months, and they ran the scanner up and down them and did the thing, and everybody was standing in line, and everybody was patient, nobody said a word, you know, there was nobody that was getting, you know, come on, let's go, and it was, you know, it made me feel good to send my whole family on an airplane, which I really wasn't excited about, but you know, she wanted to go down there,
I'll tell you, there's nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with the added security. I mean,
I understand completely, sir. Thank you. Yes, and I think that they should make the cockpit inaccessible, period. One reason that the airlines are hurting, I really think if you think about this, you'll know I'm right. Where I am would be by air right now. Impossible to justify. In other words, let's say I wanted to get to Los Angeles, all right? I would have to take a one-hour trip from where I am to Las Vegas. I would then have to wait an hour and a half to 2 hours, I guess, I am being told, in the airport for security checks and such. Then there would be a one-hour flight to Los Angeles, and then, of course, the attendant difficulty in traversing the Los Angeles airport. It would be easier to drive. It would be as fast to drive and less hectic to drive. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I guess we're going to have to adjust what we do in America, and we're going to have to get used to the security. And maybe the short-haul flights will not be as profitable as they once were. Now, certainly for any long-haul flight, if you were going across the country, no contest. You would certainly still fly. You would have to fly, and for many things, you're going to have to fly. But for short, relatively short hauls, you know, 350, 400 miles, something like that, do the math. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi, how are you doing, Art?
All right.
I just wanted to comment about the calls you got in about the anti-war comments and all
yes.
that. And
yes.
I know you're probably still getting many of them. But I was wondering if you'd noticed, at least I did, I kind of drew this conclusion from last Tuesday's broadcast, that most of the people who were calling in that were against going to war or were, you know, unnerved by it,
yes,
seemed to be of baby boomer generation age. Now, mm-hmm. now I'm don't want anyone getting upset about this, but it just seemed to me, and I didn't know whether you felt that way,
Not necessarily. I thought that it was a pretty good demographic spread, actually.
Okay. Well, I was wondering if the reason behind that might be because of, that they had to go through the Vietnam War, and they did have to go see what kind of hassles and problems and tragedies that came out of that.
Well, let me tell you what I noticed about them, all right?
Okay.
Not so much any demographic specificity, but rather I noticed that most of them that thought we should not go to war, should not go get these people, also spent at least half their call or better documenting why they don't like the United States, documenting why our foreign policy stinks, documenting, they said, why everything that we're doing wrong. In other words, it seemed to me that they weren't exactly on our side.
So Canadians? No, that was wrong. No. No, I mean, was it just people? Do you think that people in America, that America is so down on itself that there are so many people out there that feel that America is such an unjust place, that how did this happen? How did we get
you know
so
I mean
people,
I, people have okay people have various axes to grind, sir. For example, people who don't like abortion, basically they're saying, well, then we deserved it. People who don't like our support of Israel, well, then we deserved it. People who don't like some of the fracases that we've been involved in and some, CIA-type operations that we've been involved in, were involved in during the Cold War. They don't like that, so we deserve it, and we shouldn't go get them. That's what I noticed about the callers. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. My question is really kind of something a little bit different. How come, what I want to know is how come they can't, if they can build an ejection to eject the cockpit of space shuttle,
yeah,
and save the astronauts,
yes,
why can't they do the same thing for an airplane, for the cabin?
Well,
to keep people from being killed.
Well, what are you talking about?
Like, figure out
eject all the passengers, you mean?
Eject the cabin down with parachutes like they would with the cockpit of space shuttle.
I don't think there's been any engineering that would achieve that yet, sir. Thank you. It is an idea, and it's being used on light planes. Light planes, actually, some of them now have parachutes. So if they get in trouble, they pop the chute, and the plane floats down. I'm not sure the parachute idea is functional with an airliner the size of a 737 or better. But, I'm not an engineer. What do I know? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Oh, my God. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. Where are you and who are you?
I'm calling you from Boston, WRKO.
Boston, of course.
All right. I knew Malachi.
Oh, you knew Malachi?
I'm not lying to you. I knew him.
Okay.
And he said on your show, do you remember what he said?
I remember a lot of things he said, sir. What are you referring to?
That is pertains to this. He said something is going, before he died, when he was on your show, he said something is going to happen that's going to scare everybody.
Well, actually, what he said, sir, was something would happen that would have everybody looking up.
He did. Okay, maybe I misheard, but I could have sworn he said something is going to happen.
I don't think he would use the word scare.
Frightened. I think he used the word frightened.
He might have done that. He might have used that. He really did say, though, that something would happen that would have everybody looking up.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
First of all, people who are into the "we deserve it" syndrome, it has nothing to do with foreign policy. Like you've been saying, these people aren't just out to destroy us; they're out to destroy the West. It's not Oliver Stone paranoia. Governments around the world are frightened by these people. That's the issue. The issue is a matter of survival. It's not a matter of whether we deserve it on our foreign policy. These people are beyond negotiation. I would like to make a couple suggestions to you. The first thing is, and I know you probably feel very controversial about this, is that there should be some sort of specially researched prayer session on your show one particular evening that possibly could be linked to radio stations throughout the world that would would allow everybody to concentrate in a constructive way on prayer. And there's that doctor whose name escapes me in Arizona and New Mexico, who you probably know. He's a physician. You know who I mean?
I listened, and I heard that female officer, and I'll never forget that all my life. So I've heard that, Sergeant.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. It's just a terrible atrocity. I won't even consider this a tragedy. It's an atrocity, the attacks on innocent civilians, and the loss of life is just so great that you can't really understand it. When I finally gotten down to ground zero, just the gravity of what I was saying was something that I couldn't really fathom. I thought I was in a dream, basically.
Yeah.
I would walk away and have to go back just to view it again. I did that quite a number of times, and it's just a horrible feeling inside that you get when you're standing there and just taking it all in.
How is the morale in the police department and fire department now? I guess you can speak to the police department at least.
Well, I can tell you we're working long hours. It's starting to subside now. But when this first happened, we were working pretty much 6 to 7 days a week, 12-hour tours, and then some. The cops, they were actually fighting with the supervisors to actually get down to ground zero, because every single one of them wanted to get in there and help in some manner. So they arranged that to let pretty much everybody on the force at this particular time get down to ground zero and do some kind of digging, a rescue, to get into the rescue effort. Most of us, we had sent down there as a security detail to secure the perimeter to make sure that no one gets in that's not supposed to be there. It is one large crime scene, and I have never seen a crime scene that large before.
Yeah. What's New York like now? Have things begun to resemble anything approaching normal now? Or, you know, you can kind of feel a beat of the street, and you're on the street all the time. So what's it like?
Well, the work crews down there are doing a fantastic job. They're really, really working around the clock, 7 days a week. We have firemen and police officers coming from all over the country. It's pretty amazing to see the Los Angeles County Police Department walk by with their rescue efforts. And the one thing that I noticed the most is the outpouring of support and love from the people in New York City. They're actually feeding us, clothing us, giving us places to sleep. The support is something that I've never seen.
I guess in a way that is kind of what I was asking about. In other words, you're out on the street on a, you know, on a daily basis when you're working, when you don't have the night off. What are people like? Do you notice a difference in people since September 11th?
Definitely. It's hard to describe, basically. When we would drive by in RMPs, let's face it, we're not the most well-liked people out there most of the time. But when we drive through the streets, we actually have people waving, telling us that they really appreciate it. You know, that God bless you, the whole nine yards. It's really something. It's such a change in the climate of the city. Very, very, provocative.
You say here at the bottom of the sheet that I've got that you're a devout Catholic.
Yes.
When I first looked at some of the photographs that came from CNN of the impact on the Second World Trade Center, there is unmistakably, you don't have to wonder about it, it's an unretouched photograph. It shows what appears to be a demonic face in the smoke. I don't know whether you've had an opportunity to see that photograph or not yet.
Yes, I have.
But it's one chilling photograph. It's not like a Rorschach test where you have to sort of look at it and, well, gee, let's see, what do I see here? It kind of jumps right out at you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Is it your view at all that there could have been some sort of real demonic demonstration there?
Well,
this basically leads us into the types of evil that we have. The primary evil, which comes from the devil, and secondary evil is the evil that human beings inflict on one another.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of people, Sergeant, that think the only kind of evil in the world is the kind that people have within themselves.
Well, they're mistaken. They're definitely mistaken. There is an orchestrator of this evil, and he is known as the devil and Satan, and he is very, very real. This particular act that has the footprint of the devil on it, but it was carried out by so-called human beings. It's something that we have this thing called free will. I know that you've touched on this many a time.
I sure have.
And we are given free rein to exercise that free will to do either good or evil. These particular characters decided that they were going to do evil. The devil doesn't have any control over a person's free will, but he can definitely influence it and manipulate it through the physical world as well as internally through the person's senses. And I know that you've discussed these problems with fundamentalists, and I'm sorry to say that pretty much every major religion in the world has had these dark moments where they've actually killed other people.
Including Christianity.
Yes, including Christianity. But this is not based on the whole of Christianity. I would go as far as to say it was a small group. But a small group can do a lot of damage if they have the means.
You bet.
And that's what we've seen here with the World Trade Center. But I'm a firm believer that God does not allow evil to exist without something good coming out of it. We may not see it. It may be something that takes place somewhere else. But in this situation, the World Trade Center, that is the center of the universe right now. And everything outside of that is going to be affected by it. And I've seen good coming out of this. I know that it's an unfortunate situation, and it's an atrocity, like I said earlier, but I see a lot of people coming together that normally wouldn't be coming together, and I'm just hoping that we can continue on this path, and we will have a better world for it, and that's what I'm praying for.
Well, right now, and we were talking about it a little bit last hour, the spiral coming out of all of that is affecting everything. It's affecting the economy. People are staying home. People aren't flying, despite the urgings of everybody concerned. They're kind of keeping the home fires burning right now, and the economy is suffering.
Well, that's going to happen with something of this magnitude. Hopefully, with time, we'll be able to heal and get on. But this is a little something that's different. We still have a very strong possibility. I would say pretty much 100% that there are going to be more attacks.
I agree.
And we are gearing up for it. You know, the FBI is working around the clock, the CIA. The police departments are doing all we can for this. A lot of cops are out there. They're very vigilant. They're checking things out. And hopefully we can put an end to a lot of these terrorist cells that are out there and at least put a dent in the type of damage that they can cause.
One has to wonder how many are still in this country and probably prepared to act, and the answer to that is probably quite a few, and that they will try.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. Unfortunately, I am sure of that.
But again, even though it was the act of these men who did what they did, still, is it possible that the stamp of real evil behind this somewhere was seen that day?
Well, you know, with that photograph, with the figure, the face on it.
Yes.
You know, I'm of the belief that you can take photographs of smoke and eventually get something out of it.
You can.
I'm pretty sure of that. I mean, I have one of my cops show me a photograph. And he actually has a demonic face in the smoke.
Oh, absolutely. It's there for real.
And I will be trying to get you those photographs because the cops had taken some tremendous photographs down there. when I had asked to look at the photographs, I was just looking to see, you know, what it looked like on the photograph, you know, what the World Trade Center looked like on the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up getting a different array of spirit energy on these photographs,
yes.
Literally hundreds, which is consistent with the amount of people that perished in that in those buildings. So I am continually, the cops are coming up to me with their photographs now to look at them. I guess they all want to get some kind of spirit energy, and they're not being disappointed with the stuff that they get. And I will get them to you when I get copies so you can put them up on your website.
Well, what kind of things are they showing you, Sergeant?
Well, what we were seeing in one particular photograph that stands out in my mind, there was what I consider what I call spirit energy, which is little balls of light.
Yes.
And some of them are different, varying degrees of intensity. Some are very bright, some are very dark, or you can't really see them that well.
I would imagine there's an incredible amount of that kind of energy in that area.
Well, from what I've seen, like I said, there was hundreds of them in this particular photograph, and the officer that took the photograph had stepped over to his left about maybe 2 or 3 feet and snapped another photograph within a minute's time.
Right.
And on that photograph, you can only see about 3 balls of energy. He felt that the photograph was ruined, and I told him it's not ruined. What you have here is you have a very good photograph of spirit energy. He thought that they were dust particles, but that's not the case, because the other photograph, you can actually see only 3 of them in there. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
At that point, I was really scrutinizing these photographs, and some of them were just so profound that you didn't even have to look that hard. You could see it. One of the theories that I've had over the years is that spirit energy only comes out in circles and round balls. I always felt that anything octagonal in shape was the lens reflecting the light.
Right.
I started to see other shapes of spirit energy in these photographs. Some of them were pretty close to a cross and other types of shapes. And that sort of threw my theory right out the window, because they were just as profound as the round balls of energy. And they were all over the photograph, so it wasn't just one light source. And there were actually some photographs that were taken where there was no light at all.
Is it your view, Sergeant, that these energies that you have photographs of are the energies of the souls of the departed?
Yes, yes. And what struck me is the different intensities that they were coming out on the film. And I attribute that to the spirituality of the person while they were alive. The more spiritual they were, the brighter in intensity that spirit energy appeared on the film.
Huh.
I would be safe to say that.
Do you think that those constitute what we understand to be the soul of that person, and there's a real consciousness contained in that, or is it just what's left?
No, I'm sure that it is a real consciousness in there. That is the basically the person themselves. We have a physical body, but our soul is really what we are. That energy that's showing up on that film is actually these poor souls that perished in the attack. There's no doubt in my mind that a lot of them are confused. They have no idea what's happened to them, and they're staying there. They're hanging around.
Yeah.
Eventually, through a lot of prayer,
they'll move on.
I'm sure that they'll move on, but some will linger.
All right, Sergeant. Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Sergeant Ralph Sarchi, New York City Police Department, is my guest. He's been on the force there for 16 years. We've got a lot to talk about tonight with somebody who knows an awful lot. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.
take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
Oh, you're on a ride, all right. Sergeant Ralph Sarchi is with us, New York City Police Department, for 16 years. We're talking about all kinds of things you probably wouldn't expect we're going to talk about. Stand by. Well, all right. You were treated to an extra commercial or so then, and that means there'll be less later. Sergeant, welcome back. You know, those spirits that you were talking about that were photographed, how would you delineate between those spirits of departed and something that might be demonic or evil?
Well, you would need somebody who has psychic ability to pretty much decipher that. This spirit energy would come out the same. Probably more pronounced, more in intensity for a demonic spirit, than it would for a human spirit. But that would be a tough one to call.
You knew Father Malachi Martin, Father Malachi Martin, I understand, and he was a very good friend of mine. Had him on the air many times, as I'm sure you know.
Yes, yes.
And I wonder how you met him and what your dealings with him were.
Well, I was asked to drive him up to a seminar up in Connecticut. I had some friends up there that I worked with. And, I just got in touch with Father Martin, and we met myself and my partner, Joe Forrester. We went down to meet him. We built a very good friendship from that first meeting.
What was that like?
Well, after reading about him and being involved in the work, that was a super experience. I have never really met anybody like him that's involved in this work.
Nor have I. And you were involved in this work prior to meeting him, weren't you?
Yeah.
Long time.
Yes.
How in the world, as a police sergeant, did you get involved in this work? And to the degree that you took part in what? A whole bunch of exorcisms, I understand, about 20?
20, right.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yes.
It's 20 more than I have. And take me back, if you will, and tell me how in the world you got involved in this. That's dangerous work.
It's just as dangerous as being a cop. I mean, you take your chances and you put your faith in God that he's going to protect you. And that's basically how, I go through life, just putting my faith in God.
That's what Father Malachi said when I asked him about it. roughly what he said.
That's the way it's supposed to be. Unfortunately, the way the world is, not too many people really feel that way, and they're sort of missing something, as far as I'm concerned, as far as Father Mon is concerned. I mean, we have many discussions about faith. We didn't only talk about the devil. Sometimes I just don't want to talk about him, and neither did Father Martin.
Right.
So we would talk about a whole array of other things, and faith just happened to be on the top of the list. He taught me so much. He taught me an awful lot about this work and about my faith. Actually, I made quite a few changes as far as, how my faith goes now. I am basically a traditional Catholic, like Father Martin was, and I actually work with a traditional Catholic bishop, Bishop Robert McKenner, out of Monroe, Connecticut.
Were all of the exorcisms that you were involved in sanctioned by the Catholic Church?
Well, they were all basically done by Bishop McKenna. Like I said, I've worked on official church cases, but not in an official capacity.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't really come to a layman, basically outside the realm.
sure.
So to speak.
The very inner circle.
Sure. Yeah, pretty much.
Sure.
It's a matter of trust. You know, the Catholic Church doesn't really trust a lot of people outside that inner circle. And, you know, whichever way it works, I've gotten a lot of cases from Catholic priests who knew about the work that I was involved in, and I would get a lot of referrals that way. But basically, my area of work is with Bishop McKenna.
Why do you think you were selected to be present at exorcisms?
I don't know. I built a rapport with Bishop McKenna, and I was there to offer my assistance, and you know, through the people that I work with, you know, it was just the way it went. That's where I would bring my cases when I got them.
Can you tell me about an exorcism?
Sure. Well, there's different degrees of exorcism.
Or maybe the one that stays in your mind with the strongest echoes.
The one that stays in my mind is a very dangerous case for me. It was a woman who's been possessed for many, many years. And this actually came into my partner, Joe. He had met the woman through a priest who performed healing masses. And Joe had set up an exorcism with the bishop. This was even before I was involved in the work.
Mm-hmm.
The exorcism was unsuccessful, as every subsequent exorcism that this woman has gone through. This is a very, very powerful demon. It's what we consider a devil. Devils are very, very powerful.
So not the devil, or
no, it's not what we would consider Satan or the devil. We call them devils because they were very high on the hierarchy of angelic spirits prior to them being cast out of heaven.
Well, what kind of behavior, Sergeant, would lead you to believe that, for example, in this case, and I obviously, you're not going to identify her, and I don't want you to, but I mean, what kind of behavior would delineate between somebody needing an exorcism and somebody who, you know, perhaps should better be at Bellevue or any number of other answers that would be short of demonic possession?
Okay, what we would look for is the signs that are listed in the Roman ritual. Speaking in a different language,
yes.
Knowing future or past events that they would have no way of knowing, a complete and utter hatred for anything holy, religious articles, churches, and also levitating, and pretty much other physical acts that are so outside the realm of
levitating. You said levitating.
Yes, levitating.
Sergeant, have you seen levitation?
No, not yet.
Have you heard of people who have seen it?
Yes, I'm very familiar with cases where there were levitations that were taking place.
Uh-huh.
I've been spared that up until this point. And it, to tell you the truth, I hope that I'm spared from that for the rest of my life, or as long as I'm involved in the work. It's not something that I want to see.
It's not hard, Sergeant, for you to tell the difference between somebody who's mentally ill and somebody who is truly possessed.
Well, you know what happens is that a person who is suffering from mental illness, they're pretty much suffering from mental illness, and you could see that. A person who is demonically possessed, they'll go through periods of normalcy in their life. In other words, they're able to function in a normal fashion,
mm-hmm.
to a degree. The demonic, they don't possess somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are periods of normalcy in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it also depends on what's taken place. We can have a demonic possession that's progressed from the first stage of diabolical activity, which is infestation. We can actually map out what stage we're in by the types of phenomenon that's taken place. Usually the person, they know that there is something definitely wrong, something that's not quite normal in their lives.
A husband, a wife, a family member?
Everybody in the family will usually see it. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah. In other words, I assume that before it comes to your attention, obviously, somebody in the family has called it to the attention of others.
Oh, sure, yeah. This is something that it will upset the whole entire family. But the thing is that demonic, they will attack in different ways. We've found that the stages sometimes don't progress in the order that we prescribe them, like the infestation, the oppression, and the actual possession. Sometimes stages are skipped. Sometimes they progress in 2 weeks' time. Sometimes it'll take 10 years.
Okay, well, I understand infestation.
Right.
No question about that. That's when it gets in you.
No, the infestation is basically where you would have your haunted house, so to speak.
Oh, that kind of infestation.
Yeah, that would be your physical environment is being manipulated at that point.
Okay.
To a very small degree. It's usually very subtle. It starts slowly and then progresses. It's usually centered around one particular person. That's how the demonic isolate people in the homes, and they effectively break down their wills at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because here we are back to the free will again. The demonic cannot possess somebody if the person can resist at that point. They have no control over a person or their soul, because that's God-given. The soul belongs to God, unless that particular person gives permission to the demonic to possess them. Then you have a perfect possession. Father Malachi Martin told me, if you come across somebody who's perfectly possessed, run like hell. And coming from him, I know that he's very serious about that.
Yeah, he told me the same thing, Sergeant. In fact,
yes.
He said, I asked him, I said, have you come to be able to recognize the perfectly possessed? And he said, oh, yes, I can recognize them as I walk down the streets of New York. If I pass one, I know what I've passed.
Yes. He had that ability. That was his God-given ability to do that.
And then the second stage is what?
The second stage would be the oppression. And it's a twofold stage now. With the oppression, you still have the phenomenon that was happening in the infestation stage, but now it's multiplied.
Mm-hmm.
The phenomenon becomes increasingly frightening to the family members, who pretty much have no clue as to what's going on. You know, their life is turned upside down. They're living in a hellish nightmare, and they really don't have any way of getting out of it. The second part to that, to this stage, is the obsession, where the attacks become internalized on what we call the focal person. This is the person that the demonic has singled out for possession.
All right.
Now you'll have the weaknesses of that particular person are attacked. Their sin becomes even worse. Bad habits lead into sin. They're starting to get these thoughts, alien thoughts. They could even become violent, uncontrollable. It starts to rip the family apart, because one of the tactics of the demonic is to divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have a family with no love, it's easier to break down will. And they basically have a free rein at that point, because there's nothing holding the family together. They're dysfunctional at this particular point. After that, then you'll have the stage of possession, a full possession, where the demonic spirit actually takes over that focal person, which would lead into an exorcism.
You know, Father Malachi Martin told me that during the last year that he was alive, the number of possessions and demonic possessions in his area, your area, went up by 800%. 800%.
Well, I'm sure of it, because if you just look at the Archdiocese of New York, we have Father James Labar is the official exorcist for this diocese.
Mm-hmm.
He's also trained four other priests to become exorcists. Now, if that doesn't show you that there's a need for it, I don't know what will. The Archdiocese of Chicago has just appointed an exorcist within the last few years, after not having one for 160 years.
Oh.
The Pope had actually performed an exorcism in September of 2000. in St. Peter's Square of a woman that was possessed.
The Pope did?
The Pope actually performed an exorcism, yes, an impromptu exorcism at that.
You know, I've even heard there was a story going around that even Mother Teresa had undergone an exorcism. It seemed too incredible to even discuss, but I heard that it had happened.
Well, that wasn't explained properly. It is very possible that Mother Teresa had gone through an exorcism, but not for the reason that we would think. She was not possessed. Throughout the lives of these saints, like St. John Vianney, Curia Vaz, and Brother Peter Basto, they were assaulted by the demonic. They would have infestation taking place within their cells at night. Padre Pio is another saintly man who was attacked by the devil physically. The way I see it is that Mother Teresa was having this type of phenomenon taking place. It would be considered an oppression. And an exorcism can be performed on a person who is obsessed. It would be the minor form of exorcism, which is the Pope Leo XIII prayer, or the Roman ritual could be used, either one. It depends on the priest performing the exorcism.
So in effect, she was under attack.
That's what it was. She was under attack. She was not possessed. That I can assure you.
Is there ever any stage of possession when it is too late, when an exorcism will not work?
Well, yeah, perfect possession is one example of that. And there are particular cases that, like we started to discuss that earlier, with the woman. It seems that there are certain cases that, no matter how many times they're exorcised, how many priests are used, it just doesn't seem to happen. There could be so many different variables when it comes to that. The person themselves can somehow hold the demonic spirit in and not want the exorcism to basically succeed.
No, I don't think that most people understand that's possible. Most people thought that exorcism would drive out the very worst case no matter what. The answer to that is not true?
No, unfortunately it's not true. We have different types of demonic spirits like I was discussing, leading from very low-level demonic spirits, which we would call familiars, to devils. Not the devil himself, but a demonic spirit that's very, very powerful.
Would it be proper to say of the devil?
Well, I don't know of too many cases where the devil himself would actually possess somebody.
No, but of the devil, in some manner of the devil, if not directly of the devil.
Yes.
Certainly one of his pals.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, that's where they come from. He's the boss.
Yeah, he's the boss,
and
right?
They do what he says.
All right, Sergeant. Hold on. Relax. You've got about a 10-minute break. We'll do the news, take care of a little bit of business, and be right back. Sergeant Ralph Sarchi of the New York City Police Department, 16 years with the New York City Police Department, is my guest. He was a confidant of Father Malachi Martin. And we'll be back with more in a few moments. Go ahead with this lady, the one that you were telling us about. As much as I can understand it, I really would like to know exactly really what does go on at an exorcism.
Well, with this particular case, like I said, she was undergone many exorcisms, and she had contacted my partner Joe and asked if Bishop McKenna would work with her again. Mm-hmm. So we decided to set up a three-day exorcism for her.
Three-day?
It was going to go over a three-day period.
Mm.
We were going to end the exorcism on the Triumph of the Cross. It's a holy day in the Catholic Church. Well, we had gone through the 3 days, and there really wasn't a lot of violence going on with this particular demon, although it could definitely have attacked in that manner.
Is it constant? I mean, during the 3 days, is that a 24-hour-a-day operation? Are you by her all the time?
No, we would go for as long as the bishop deemed necessary, and then we would stop or take breaks during the exorcism. But this was over a three-day period with breaks in between, meaning we didn't go on a full 24 hours. There's no way we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
The attacks were more mental, in the mental realm than a physical attack. There are areas that the demonic will attack during an exorcism that could be emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, and of course physically. This particular demon was a very powerful demon.
Does a demon try to break your faith, your spirit?
Well, yeah, that's where one of the attacks you come. If it's spiritual, you'll start to doubt your faith. And this is a very, very dangerous area for the exorcist to go through.
Mm-hmm.
If he starts to doubt his faith, he could wind up basically losing his life, if not becoming possessed himself. So the exorcist himself has to be of unwavering faith, and nothing can enter into his thoughts during the time of the exorcism, except he must keep his eyes, his mind on God. Read the Roman ritual and ask certain questions that have to be asked.
So in other words, sir, and he the exorcist, if he begins to doubt his own faith, he begins to then exhibit the same weaknesses that allowed the possession to occur in the person they're trying to exorcise, and that's the danger, right? It could jump.
Well, that could be very possible. A transient possession could take place, meaning that it's not a full possession, but he can be possessed for a short period of time, or it can be a full possession where he actually is taken over fully. The exorcist has to keep his mind on God, and he has to dismiss that type of an attack immediately. That would be the class stage that Father Martin talks about, where it's an actual battle between the exorcist and the demon.
Have you seen that?
Well, you know, a lot of times the stages, they don't present themselves as clearly to everybody in the room.
Yeah, you were saying that, and that it might not even occur in the prescribed stages.
It can. All the stages can come at once, as Father Martin had told my partner, Joe, is that all of these stages during the exorcism could come at once, or they could come in different order. The demonic are not bound by anything but God, and if he allows it to happen, then you can rest assured that they are going to do it. But this particular exorcism, like I said, it took a total of 3 days, and it wasn't successful. Some of the things that I seen at that exorcism, I will never forget.
Can you talk about?
Yeah. Well, there was one particular. It was the last day of the exorcism, and I brought a relic of the True Cross with me.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had three relics of the True Cross in that church.
Right.
And we decided to do that because it was the triumph of the cross. Like I said, it was a day that we celebrate the cross in the Catholic faith. And I had placed I was behind the woman, and I had placed the relic right next to the right side of her temple.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the demon basically was in control of this person at this point. It would not allow her to turn her head and look directly at the cross, but I could see this extremely hateful and murderous look that this demon was given this the relic of the True Cross. And that's something that I'll never forget. I mean, I've seen people in all stages of emotions out there on the street. I've seen people that would just sooner stab you than look at you. I've seen people that were mentally deranged, and I have seen people that were completely and utterly devastated from the loss of a loved one. And I have never seen a look in their eyes the way this look was. They say that the eyes are the window of the soul. Well,
yes.
I could tell you I was looking at pure evil at that particular moment. It's pretty unnerving when you have a woman speaking in a deep guttural voice that is not her own.
Very unnerving.
It is very unnerving, but basically you're there to do a job, and that's the way we look at it. We're there to protect the bishop from coming under harm. We're there to protect the person who's being exercised from coming under harm.
So in other words, your job then, at least to some degree, was protection. I'm sure that they depended on you for, if it was needed, real physical protection.
Well, that's the only thing that the assistant does. A layperson should never take the role of exorcist when it comes to a public exorcism or a solemn exorcism.
Well, I can tell you, when I had Father Martin on, people used to call who had done exorcisms, and he would always warn them.
Yes.
That there was great danger, and I guess there is great danger. You've described some of it.
Yes, there is. You have to be a very holy and pious person to undertake the role of exorcist.
In other words, don't try this at home.
No, don't. I would not suggest it. The Catholic Church does not suggest it. That would be really playing with fire, and you could get burnt very, very badly. Basically, what happens is, if the exorcism is not successful, there is a certain amount of backlash that you're going to receive. And in this particular case, I received enough of it for a lifetime. For every year after that exorcism, in September, I've had major problems in my life. And it's just something that I never even thought about. It would actually take my partner Joe to tell me, "Hey, Ralph, it's September. Do you remember?" And then I would say, you're right. And I wasn't vigilant enough.
So in other words, you think this is still affecting your life now?
Yeah. Without a doubt. And it's also the other exorcisms that I've been involved in and the other cases. It's not only exorcisms that can affect you. I mean, you could go into a case of infestation or oppression and get affected in that way.
Yourself?
Yeah, definitely. My whole entire family has come under attack at one time or another because of my involvement in the work.
How do they feel about that?
Well, my wife knows that this is something that I feel very strongly about, and she supports me 100%. I mean, she's not really too happy when she sees what you would consider the shadow people.
The shadow people?
No, she's not too happy. My daughters, they're quite young, but they remember seeing some things in the house. And
well, since you brought it up, as you probably know, that came out of nowhere. One person sending me an email, which I happened to read on the air, and then I got thousands upon thousands people saying they have seen these beings, whatever they are. People have seen them. I even got photographs, Sergeant, one of an obviously evil entity on top of a young boy. That was really troubling. You have something to say about these so-called shadow people?
Well, yes. I believe that the shadow people are predominantly demonic spirits in nature. They're diabolical in nature. But you will have, I'm sure, human spirits that are manifesting themselves in that way. You usually see them from your peripheral vision.
That's right.
When you take a look head-on, it's no longer there.
That's right.
This particular shadow that we were seeing, you could see head-on. And it was rather large. It was about 8 feet tall. My wife had seen it first. I had seen it soon after that, and then it reappeared once again, in my home.
Well, as I began to get these thousands of responses, Sergeant, many of them said, at first I saw them in my peripheral vision, but for some time now I've been seeing them head-on.
Right.
So that doesn't surprise you.
No, not at all. It wants to be seen. If you're seeing it head on, it wants to be seen. It wants to, get some kind of a response from you, usually fear. It's not really nice if you would get up in the middle of the night to go get a drink of water and see a black shape that's blacker than the night. You cannot mistake it. It's there. You can see it. And you can actually feel that your body responds to it. But like I said, it could be also a human spirit. That's the way it chose to manifest itself.
Mm.
And it could actually be somebody astral projecting themselves to your area also. That's another.
That has been suggested by
yeah.
just about everybody, that it might be this and that.
Right.
I suppose it could be those things.
Yeah, but what I found is that it's very consistent with cases of infestation and oppression that these spirits would be seen. But not only that, I've had cases where people were telling me about these grotesque beings that would actually manifest in front of them. And they were all different types of shapes and sizes, but there was one thing that was consistent with every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the feeling of hatred that they got from this particular manifestation. It was so overpowering that they would recoil from that hatred. And that's what the demonic is all about, is that hatred, because they hate humanity. They want to destroy us because we are all made in the image of God.
Is it worth asking, Sergeant, if there's an 800% increase in exorcisms, then we must assume there is an increase in evil presence or possession on Earth right now, not just New York, but probably right across the face of the Earth. Why is there so much more evil here now?
Well, I think it's that time, that point in history that we are all waiting for. I don't want to go into, saying that the end times are near. I wouldn't be as fanatical as that. But I definitely see a breakdown in society, in the morals that we have, in the way we go about conducting business, the spirituality of people. I do see a rise in spirituality, though.
There is, yes.
That's what I mentioned earlier in the beginning of the program, is that God will never allow evil to flourish without something good coming from it. And I believe in that so strongly that I can actually see that. There are people that are hungry for spirituality, and the problem is a lot of people just don't know where to start.
Well, church attendance is up. Programs like mine that deal a great deal with spirituality are being listened to. You're right. I mean, there is a more spiritual behavior out there. There's no question about it, but it's going on at the same time the increase in evil is.
Well, when you have an increase in spirituality, you'll have an increase in evil.
As a result? I mean, is this like, it's a war and we're the pawns?
Well, basically, yeah. That's the way it works.
Basically, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, basically.
All right. Most Americans are used to, about the only thing they know about exorcisms would be the movie The Exorcist, right? That's about all they know.
Right.
It's not quite like that, is it? Or is it?
No. I don't believe that there's a person on the face of the earth that can go through that type of phenomenon in one exorcism, in one sitting. That's just Hollywood hype. A lot of the things that took place during the movie... the levitations, the actual change in features, the vomiting, maybe not to that degree, but the original Exorcist case, instead of the vomit, it was spit that this particular 12-year-old boy, he had a dead marksman eye to hit you in the face with his spit from across the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that came from. The change in voice, that's all consistent with what exorcism is all about. As far as a head spinning around, I really don't believe that would happen. I hope not, because I don't think I would ever be the same after seeing something like that.
Probably not.
But, you have to realize that we are human beings that are involved in this, and God will not allow certain things to happen because of our... how fragile we really are. And I believe he protects us from a lot of the things. In fact, I know he protects us from a lot of the things that the demonic would love to do to us.
Have you ever, during the course of an exorcism, begun to feel yourself fail in any way?
Well, probably one of the most profound things that happened to me at an exorcism was these frightening visions that pop into your mind. Things that I wouldn't even want to discuss. You know, I wrote about a lot of these things in the book. I wouldn't go into them because I really just don't. I don't want to relive that.
All right. Your book. It's called Beware of the Night.
Beware of the Night, right?
Beware of the Night. And of course, as always, it's available. I think, folks, on Amazon.com. I presume it is, right?
Yes.
Okay, Sergeant, so people can go to my website, artbell.com. Just go to tonight's guest info. It'll take you over there for the book, Beware of the Night, which is, I guess, a detailed account of some of these things you went through, Sergeant?
Yes, yes. I've gone into specific cases that I felt was consistent with the point that I wanted to bring about the demonic and how they, you know, how they work in our lives. So, it's not just a book of cases. It's a book of where I go into explaining exactly what's going on in the case and why it's going on.
Sergeant, you're on the street a lot, right?
Yes.
You're on patrol, I take it?
Yes.
Yeah. On the street, have there been times when you and your partner have run into something that was just not a crime, but was demonic itself, where you looked at each other and you both knew what was going on?
No, I haven't. I really haven't. I can't say that I did. A lot of times, evil does not want to be have any light shed on it. And they would very well know what I'm involved in. And they wouldn't want any chance of me getting involved in actually setting something up for an exorcism and things of that nature. What I run mostly into, and it's sort of ironic, is disproving that somebody is possessed. I would get a lot of, you know, if I would go to a job, somebody would say, you know, I'm the devil and all that stuff. And I would basically just tell them, shut up and sit down, and that would be the end of it. But I've run more into that. You know, I would have people say to me, you know, this person is possessed, and I would look into it right there on the scene, and I would see no signs of possession. I would see signs of a mental illness or, you know, drug use or alcoholism, things
sure,
of that nature.
Sure. Just straight-out criminal behavior. There are some crimes, though, and I know police don't run into these every day like they do on television, but there are some crimes that are so horrible. So horrible, some of them without apparent motive, where people are just killing to kill, that, you know, the average person sits down and watches the news and wonders, God, that just plain seems evil. Why else to have done it?
Well, that's what it is. It's that secondary evil because, like I said before, the devil hates humanity so much, and any way that he can get to destroy a person, he will take. And if that is working through somebody, you know, working through a human being, they're exercising that free will to do it.
Yep. All right. By the way, your compatriots, Brooklyn South 67 Precinct are all listening to you right now. And they say hi. So I guess that's going on across the city this morning, New York City. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi from the New York Police Department, New York City Police Department. And we'll do another half hour, then we'll do some open lines if the sergeant can stay with us, and I think he probably can. So you stay there, too.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. Hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
call in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Beware the Night. As a title I like, and I can get into, Beware the Night. That's the title of the Sergeant's book, and if you'd like to look into it, go to my website, simple, artbell.com. Just click on... Actually, let me take you right there. Click on tonight's guest information. You will see Sergeant's name. Click on the link, and you'll go over to Amazon.com, and you'll be able to order the book to get it on the way. Good late-night reading, I would think. Is it possible to be possessed without knowing?
Well, usually what happens is they'll know something is wrong. There is something alien. A lot of people don't understand what's happening to them, though. Especially when they're attacked through the intellect. There are demons that will attack through intellect. There are other demons that I call the brutes. They just attack through brute force. They just possess somebody. It's plain and simple, just like that.
In cases, Sergeant, where the exorcism is successful and whatever it was that was in there is now out, where is it?
Well, it's binded and it's commanded to leave in the name of Jesus Christ. To wherever Jesus sends it.
Binded. That's very interesting. You would use the word binded. You know, people who practice the craft use the same word. They bind things.
Yes. Well, they bind things so it doesn't affect them.
Right. In other words, they might bind somebody as safe from something or themselves as safe from some sort of retribution or something.
Well, basically what we're trying to do during the Roman ritual, or the exorcist is trying to do, is basically he's commanded in the name of Jesus Christ to be silent. The whole Roman ritual is a command. It's one big giant command. You can't appease to the demonic to please leave. They have to be forced, and it's through command. And that is basically the only time in a priest's life that he should feel contempt for anything is against the demonic. There has to be a great feeling of contempt for what these demonic spirits are doing. But then again, there is a trap in that. If they feel too much contempt, the demonic can use it against them.
Carol in Madison, Wisconsin asks the following. A hard question, too, about New York. Where is God now? In everyone who has donated blood and so forth in this time of crisis? Is that where we are to see God now?
Well, you know what? God is everywhere, and he will remain everywhere. And just because the devil tries to cause us to turn away from God doesn't mean that we should accept his invitation.
What do you think of parapsychologists? I have many of them on this program, who investigate hauntings from a scientific point of view, using cameras and other equipment instead of the equipment used by an exorcist, you know, the holy water relics. You said you used relics, that sort of thing.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, they don't approach it from a religious point of view. That's number one.
That's right.
And number two is what they're basically going to do is they're going to go into a home and they're going to take readings with Gauss meters and thermometers and infrared film.
That's right.
And they'll measure the atmosphere, and then they're going to turn around, they're going to leave. And the family is still going to have their problem. When I go into a home, my main concern is not to get images on film, recordings, EVP, none of that. My concern is to try to get the thing out of the house.
But do you understand why people want to do that? For many people out there of no doubt less faith than yourself, we want to be sure, we want to know that these things are true. And the only way we know to measure that is with science.
Right.
And when we can measure it with science, it probably increases our faith that these things are are real. I mean, I do understand why they go out and do it, and I do understand why I crave that kind of evidence to put on the air here, because I want people to understand this is real.
Right. I understand that, but I have really never met a parapsychologist who believes in demonic spirits.
Really?
Basically what they would say is it's electromagnetic energy and it's underground streams and, well, and that's causing the phenomenon. And I think that's a bunch of hogwash, but it doesn't fit into their scientific point of view. So they're not really equipped to deal with it. And that's one of the things that I discuss in the book is, to let people know that this stuff does exist. And if you're actually out there investigating cases of haunted houses, you're going to run into the demonic.
That's for sure.
The only thing that saves you, basically, is that you are no longer a threat to the demonic if you're going to look at it from a scientific point of view. The danger comes in is when you become a threat. They would want to eliminate you, but it's God's protection that keeps us safe.
Well, from my point of view, I wish I had the faith you have and many others have and are very comfortable within, and I know it comforts you. I wish I had that. I believe in God, but I'm the kind of guy who just has to put his hand on something to really believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I hope the science continues. You've got to admit, Sergeant, that if science was able to conclusively prove an afterlife, that we survived this life somehow or another, our consciousness survives, then many things would change. Probably for the better.
Well, I would say that you're correct in that manner. But, see, God doesn't want us to come to him like that.
Yeah. I know.
To have proof without a doubt. Basically, you're letting that proof that you're seeing,
I know,
take over your free will.
I understand.
In order to have faith, he wants you to exercise that free will and to have an unconditional love for him. And
yeah, I guess if there were absolute proof, then faith would be not needed.
There would be no need.
And or you could argue that if there were absolute proof, a lot of people would get faith.
Yeah, very quickly.
Yeah, very quickly.
But you know what? I also find that people that are under the attack of the demonic get faith very quickly.
Uh-huh. All right. How do you delineate? You know, when you are asked to attend an exorcism, I suppose by then it's an absolute case of possession and they have determined that before you're there, but you did say there were people who fake it, and how do you determine that? In other words, if they're sitting there faking a voice or faking the ability to speak some language that you don't recognize or generally faking, how do you know?
Well, you would go by the phenomenon that was taking place. That would be number one. You know, you would do, well, I know I do an interview. And being a police officer for the amount of years, coming up on 18 years actually, I sort of learned how to interview people and bring the truth out of them.
Mm-hmm.
My partner Joe works for legal aid. He's a polygraph examiner. He's another person that basically does interviews for a living. But we have our little things that we do. And obviously, I can't tell you over the air because then everybody's going to know what I do.
Well, that's true.
When I look into these cases.
Is it like interviewing, some perp, sitting them in a room and interviewing the perp and trying to get to the truth of what happened?
Well, I wouldn't say that it is that type of atmosphere. It would be more of an interview, and I would just let the person talk to me and tell me exactly what's going on in their life. And while this is happening, I'm able to look at the person and see through gesture and how they relate to me and what they're relating to me. Then I could pretty much make my determination. I work with psychics. I pray a lot on the matter.
You work with psychics?
Yes, I do.
Now that surprises me. After what we just talked about with regard to parapsychologists in general, you work with psychics?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, usually these psychics have a religious background. For a number of years, I was working with Brother Andrew, who was in religious life. He had an extremely powerful gift. His abilities were very, very powerful, and they were centered around God. And there are other psychics that I work with that have a religious tone to what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't work with every psychic that I meet because I have to trust their judgment. And until they could prove to me that, you know, they do have a gift and it is coming from God, you know, I wouldn't be so quick to, you know, listen to what they have to say.
Gotcha.
But I do a lot of praying on the matter. And I'm just guided by what I feel and my intuition. And like I said, we have certain signs and the phenomenon has taken place.
All right, let me throw a tough one at you. Mary in Des Moines, Iowa is asking on the computer. Please ask how Father Martin died. Was there an investigation? We heard a lot of rumors, Sergeant, about Father's death. Of course, there are a lot of rumors around, I suppose, any famous person's death. But there was a rumor out there that he was pushed.
Well, this isn't the first time, and I did have a long discussion with Father Martin about the time that he was actually picked up and flipped over. And he related to me that he actually saw the devil on his way down, and I believe he sustained a broken collarbone and a slight concussion in that attack. But I do not doubt at all that the devil had a hand in his demise. Somehow, some way, the devil was able to get at him. I won't really blame the devil for his death, but I feel that maybe some circumstances, you know, it would be the case.
So at one point he was pushed.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was more than pushed. He was actually lifted up and
you see, I had not heard this for sure previously.
He was flipped over.
He was flipped over. Well, you see, I remember very well because I spoke with him myself, and I spoke with others who were taking care of him, and there was a odd kind of situation with those who were taking care of him. They were exceptionally protective of
yeah.
him.
Oh, yeah.
Very protective of him. And that time when he was flipped really began the slide downward health-wise for Father Martin, I would say, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, he was up there in years, you know, in age.
He was, yes.
And there's only so much that a man can take, knowing that he was involved for so many years with exorcisms and investigating the demonic. That will take a toll on you. There is no doubt about it. And the way I see it, he was in the field a little bit too long, but it was because of his faith and his love for God that he was able to last as long as he did.
Yes, he would not quit.
No, he would never quit. I believe that Father Martin was called to his final reward, and he deserved it, and he deserved to finally meet face to face.
Was there any official investigation, Sergeant, of his death?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Not that I'm aware of.
So these rumors are more than rumors?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, there is no sense in investigating it as far as I'm concerned, because the devil plays such a strong game that he would intervene anyway, and we would never get the truth. He would never allow the truth to come out.
He was just absolutely an amazing man.
Yes, he was. And, you know, the family that was very protective of him, they adopted him. Basically, they adopted him. There are a lot of rumors going around that, you know, he had left the Jesuit order because of some woman. That was all a bunch of hogwash. That was not the case. This is just a ploy to smear his good name, which is consistent with somebody who's doing good in this world, the way I see it. And absolutely no reality to that rumor.
All right. Bob in Los Angeles asks a pretty good question. Why would anyone purposely invite the demonic in for a perfect possession?
That is a good question.
Mm.
The only way I can answer that is that they crave power, they crave money. It may satisfy someone's ego, and they want to be able to manipulate the world around them.
But the part of this, Sergeant, that never made sense to me and doesn't now, is that if somebody believed strongly enough in an evil force that could, let us say, give us these short-term material gains, gains on the job, gains in love, in whatever area of life you wanted these gains, in trade for their immortal soul, if they believed that strongly that it could be done, then they would have to believe in the rest of it too and understand exactly what they were doing.
Well, I would say that their desire for the earthly goods that they're getting will outweigh what they're going to go through when they finally meet the devil head on.
That's so hard to believe, because again, to imagine that they could be given all that in this life, you've then got to, by extension, imagine that they know there's a God and what it is they're trading away. I mean, it's, but of course, people end their lives with their own hand, and so I guess people do all kinds of things, and it's just hard to imagine.
Well, you yourself had a guest on, I don't remember her name, but she was a witch, and the things that she was saying, I know for a fact she's perfectly possessed.
You remember her, do
you? I remember her.
Harlot was her name.
Yes, that's it. I was working that night, and I was sitting in an R&P with my driver, and I think my driver just wanted to crawl underneath the front seat of the car to get away from what he was hearing. The things that she was saying are very consistent with what the demonic are all about. She was so full of hate that it actually consumed her. She was so full of hate for God that she didn't care what would happen to her, her own soul.
I know, it still scares me to remember that, and the scariest and the worst part of it all was right toward the end of the interview. I'm sure you may remember. I asked her about her son. I was just flabbergasted, and I said, "What about your son?" And she said, "Well, he'll be with me. He'll be in hell with me." And I said, you can't do that to his soul. And she said, "Oh, yes, I can. I've given his soul to the devil." And that's, not long after that, I interviewed Father Martin. And I said, could a mother give her son's soul to the devil? And to my everlasting surprise, he said, yes. And I still don't understand that, how that can be done, how somebody can give away their own child's soul to the devil without that child accepting it. How could that be done? Do you understand that?
Yes, I do understand that. And I do have a little trouble with that, as far as that soul still not belonging to God, because it's not a conscious effort on that particular person.
Exactly.
To give his soul to the devil.
Exactly.
But the thing is that probably one of the most powerful curses that you can get is from a blood relative to another. Actually, in one of the cases that I touch on in the book discusses something similar to that, and how powerful that particular curse would be. You don't even really have to have any background in black magic or sorcery. You can just utter it, but mean it, and give it energy, and there is a good chance that a demonic spirit will pick up on it, and,
Sergeant, is black magic real?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, hold it right there. We're going to take some phone calls when we get back. I thought so. Binding and such. Maybe both forces use it. It's a strange world we live in, isn't it? I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM from the high desert.
The world was on fire. No one could save me but you.
A number that was attributed to Satan. And yeah, basically that's it. There are variations of that, but that's what it would be, the sign of the beast.
I'm not even a great religious person, Sergeant, but when my thermometer, and I've got a big one, says 66.6 degrees, I go, oh, look at that. Jeez.
Do you run hot? Do you get out of the house?
No, but I go, jeez, look at that. Wild card, you're on the air with Sergeant Sarchi. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
All right. My name is Jack.
Yes, Jack.
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
And I want to let you know that I'm very happy to hear somebody that even knows Father Malachi on your station. That's great. That man definitely moved me. I wrote him a letter about 2 weeks before he died.
Oh.
And I let him know about things that had happened with me in my life. And I was very depressed when I found out that he passed away.
As were we all.
Yep.
Anyway, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. My question is, if you've been obsessed in the past, can you actually fight that off? Because Art, when I was 13 years old, I remember laying on my mom's bed, and I was raised Catholic. And I remember just coming back from Mass one Sunday. My mom went to work, my dad went to work, and I was just rolling back and forth. I was in a sweat. I might have been sick. I don't know. But I was just asking if there was God or if there was Satan, if there was something, just come to me. Let me know. And I was doing Hail Marys, the whole thing. And I kind of just went out for a minute, and I came to, and I looked over, and there was a big white chair right next to my mom's bed, right?
Yes.
And I can't say if this has actually happened or not, because in my life, when it comes to spiritual matters, there's always the twilight. Things happen in the twilight.
Yes.
Where it's like I look, and I see, but I'm not sure if I'm awake or I'm asleep. It's like right in between.
Kyle Wall's like a shadow person story in a way, and a lot of things like that seen in the twilight. I don't know. How would you know if you were in the throes of obsession, Sergeant? How would you know?
Well, you know, you would have to look and see basically how your life has been running. If you've been, you've always had, you know, a steady way about yourself, and you know, you didn't suffer from any kind of mental problem, and all of a sudden you start to get these overwhelmingly powerful thoughts into your mind. You know, I would just start to pray. Basically, the prayer that I would use is the Rosary. It's a very powerful prayer, especially in time of trouble. But, you know, you would basically want to see if there were other things taking place in your life, maybe some outward manifestation. It can be where the demonic will skip that stage of infestation and skip all outward manifestations and just attack internally enough to break down your will. I actually had a case of that nature where it started out as a form of obsession. And wound up moving into a full-blown possession. But at that point, you would really have to stop praying and seek somebody's help.
Sergeant, why is Catholicism the only Western religion that recognizes possession of this sort and does exorcism?
No, every major religion has some form of exorcism, right?
Oh really?
The Muslims have what's called a domo, and that is an exorcist in the Muslim religion. The Jewish faith, they will have a group of rabbis that would sit and pray over a spirit. They call an evil spirit a divic, and they would have a group of rabbis praying. And then you have the different Protestant and Baptist religions that have their deliverance services. It's an exorcism, but it's not quite like the Roman Catholic exorcism where we use the Roman ritual.
That's really fascinating. I mean, I think most Americans, along with me, would be surprised. I had no idea that other religions had similar... I don't know what the right word for it is. Similar rights, I guess.
Well, it's a problem that attacks all different religions and all different races and creeds. As Father Martin said, he had done a study of about 800 exorcisms, and there was not one identifying factor that would relate to why a person would become possessed. In other words, we cannot say, you see that person over there, they're a perfect candidate to be possessed. The demonic do not discriminate. That's the best way that I can put it.
So it could happen to a young person, an old person, a middle-aged person, a Catholic, a Muslim, whatever.
Yes, most definitely.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sergeant Rolf Sarchi. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Hey, what's happening on? I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, all right.
Yeah. First of all, I gotta say to the officer here, how you doing? God bless you, you know. We appreciate all the work. And that's about it.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. And you too, Hawk. God bless you. God bless you. Good night.
Good night. I don't know. You tell me, was that really somebody from Brooklyn or somebody trying to sound like they were from Brooklyn, Sergeant?
Well, that sounds like somebody who's trying to sound like he's from Brooklyn.
That's what I thought, too. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sergeant Sarchi. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I missed most of the program, but I take you're talking about demonology and demon possession and stuff.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, what I would say to the audience and everyone is the best protection against that kind of thing is a life of prayer and virtue, and particularly the sacraments. And we have in the Eastern Orthodox Church a mantra. Well, you would call it a mantra. It's a prayer that goes, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. You say that like thousands of times, and you start to feel a peace around you, and demons cannot come around in the name of Christ. So just basically a life of virtue, sanctity, and prayer, and you should all be okay.
I'm sure you'll get no argument from that, right, Sergeant?
None whatsoever.
We'll be right back.
It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the time to get better.
Jason in Naperville, Illinois asks, are there certain types of people who are more likely to be possessed, and are there certain situations that would increase the risk or chances of a possession? That's a really good question. In other words, would a generally weak person, a drug user, somebody who has already been giving in to a lot of earthly temptations, would that person be more easily possessed, Sergeant?
Well, it's certainly a draw for the demonic, you know, that type of behavior. But like Father Martin had the study that he had done that we just spoke about, you know, there isn't one particular type of person. It's not something that we can look at in that way. Of course, when you're playing with black magic and you're into Satanism, yeah, sure, that would... I would say your chances of becoming possessed are a lot greater than if you weren't involved in something like that.
A weaker person of will, I would assume, would more easily be possessed than one of strong will.
Well, that's also true, because the demonic will pick on somebody who is weaker-willed. But if they have a plan and the person's will happens to be strong, they will do things to break down that will. In one of my cases, the demonic spirit was looking to possess the mother. And how did it go about breaking down her will? It really attacked her daughter unmercifully. Physical assaults every single day for about 3 months.
That would make sense.
Before we actually got involved with the case.
So the target wasn't the daughter, it was the mother?
No, the demonic spirit was looking to possess the mother. And it attempted to break down her will. And what is the best way to get at a parent?
Through their children.
Exactly.
Well, First time caller line. You're on the air with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. Listen, I was wondering if the sergeant could briefly touch on the case of the Calvelli. It's something that's a bit sensitive, but if you could touch on that, please.
You're in New York City.
Yes, the case of the Calvelli.
Are you familiar with that case, Sergeant?
The Calvelli? No, I'm not. Can you tell me about it?
Caller, what are you talking about? Caller? Oh, he's gone. So I guess...
We've probably been scammed.
Perhaps so. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Sergeant Ralph. This is Dan in Sacramento. I was curious to... I wanted to ask you if you had any experience or if you were... if it's possible that people that immerse themselves in heavy metal rock music, like the real dark negative music, if that's a way to open yourself up to possession or to be oppressed by demonic spirits. And also, the other, I think the question was kind of answered, is how people can open themselves up to possession or how it happens.
Sure. On the one hand, the answer seems to be that there's no answer, that they just go after, the devil goes after who they want. But on the other hand, it's a good question. I mean, the music that is so dark and almost evil does seem to psychologically set somebody up for something like that. That's what the average person would think, Sergeant.
Well, I would feel that it would tend to more of temptation than actual possession. But then again, you know, like I said, anything is possible. It depends on the person. You know, are they using drugs? Are they weakening their aura? You know, what kind of spirituality? Obviously, if you're going to listen to, really heavy metal music, you know, you're not going to be too much into going to church on Sundays.
Not likely.
But the only thing that people that dabble in that kind of stuff have is they still have protection from God. And if God doesn't allow it to happen, it won't happen, no matter how much heavy metal music they listen to.
All right. You know, it's interesting. I made this comment at the bottom of the hour, Sergeant. People who make derisive comments and humor and have to joke about this kind of thing, either that or get angry about the kind of things that you're saying tonight, what I've noticed is that their comments, ignorant comments, usually come because of fear. They're afraid, and they're afraid for themselves and their behavior, and they know what they're all about.
Well, at that caller we just had prior to this gentleman we just spoke to, I believe I know where that came from.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the kind of thing that I mean, though. They've got to reach out and say something, wiseacre something, or laugh, or make a derisive comment, and it's because of fear, and it's fear of their own behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sergeant Sarchi. Hi.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you, sir?
Mark from Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
Sergeant, sir, congratulations on your book sales moving
Thank
up
you.
A bit.
Thank you.
And that's not all Art, although he's a big help. You pretty much have sold your own book, sir.
Thank you very much.
It's enjoyable hearing of good things happening to good people. I wish we could have more of it. Evil is insidious. I don't have to tell you that. That's my take on it from what little I've seen. Have you ever been fooled by someone mentally ill, acting possessed, or more so vice versa?
I have been fooled by this particular person. The gentleman sounded extremely normal on the telephone. I mean, to both myself and my partner. By the time we got to this gentleman's home, we basically found out that the man was demented.
Mm.
So we sort of like turned around and left.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like there was, and my partner concurred with me, that this man was suffering from any kind of diabolical activity. But just because a person has some kind of a mental problem does not mean that they're not being harassed by the demonic. It's a negative emotion.
And the demonic are attracted to negativity, like we discussed with alcoholism and drug abuse and child abuse. And, you know, these are all negative emotions that that would be used, and the demonic are attracted to that, just like they're attracted to a weak and broken up aura.
I'm sure you did, Father Malachi, proud to have even made that call to make that trip over.
Okay, caller, thank you very much. West of the Rockies, you're on there with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi. Hi.
Hi, Sergeant. Hi, Art.
Hi.
I just had a question. Maybe Father Malachi had some dealings with either politicians or maybe some famous people that he had to do any exorcisms on or dealings like that, and I'll hang up and let you answer.
Well, I doubt we're going to be able to answer that one because I guess in a general way you could answer it.
Well, I wasn't aware of anything of that nature, and, you know, if I were, I wouldn't be at liberty to say anything about that. But as far as I know, Father Martin wasn't involved in anything like that.
Okay. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Sergeant Sarchi. Hi.
Hello, Art. It's very nice to actually get through and talk to you.
Glad you did. Where are you?
I'm in Duluth, Minnesota,
okay.
And I'd just like to say that I'm a senior here at the University of Minnesota in Duluth, and your show has been a big part of my life during late-night study sessions over the past 4 years.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And good evening, Sergeant.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Very good.
Excellent. I had one question for you that maybe isn't directly related to demonic possession, but it goes back about 25 years ago, a little bit before my time. I know that since you are from New York and you are on the NYPD, I'm sure you're familiar with the Son of Sam case.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you were also familiar with Maury Terry's book, The Ultimate Evil.
Yes, sure.
And in it, he seems to think that there's this nationwide cabal, I guess, of ritual magicians, and I'm wondering if you think that there's if there's anything to that, as far as maybe an increase in demonic possessions being related to the activity of some of these groups, and if you've ever run across any of their lower level soldiers, I guess, in your work as a police officer in New York.
As far as my
to such a, if you've seen anything that would justify such a suspicion.
Okay.
Well, I have dealt directly with satanic groups on a few of my cases, where the actual group was on the scene in two separate cases. I had two separate groups of Satanists present in the vicinity. One group was what we consider dabblers. They're not very well organized, but doesn't make them any less dangerous. And the other group was a very well organized group, and that would be the group that I would that what you would consider they're larger in scale. They consist of more professional people. Unfortunately, policemen are involved, nurses, doctors, even clergymen, nuns.
What?
There are plenty of groups. There are exclusive groups that only have ex-nuns in within the Satanic Coven.
Oh, my God.
Unfortunately, Satanism does reach into every aspect of our life. Or life.
So there's a lot more of it out there than we imagine?
Yes, and their secrecy is very important to them. And they have the means, because of the professional people that they have in there, to actually cover their tracks, because they have the money, they have the people that are in place to ensure their secrecy. Now, I know that there's a lot of people out there that don't believe in the satanic conspiracy. I don't know if it reaches across state lines, but I can tell you that there are a lot of groups operating pretty much in every community.
Holy smokes. I had no idea. I mean, to talk about nuns and priests and police officers and It seems impossible, but not, huh?
Well, unfortunately, that's the way it is. You know, the devil has very long reach, and he's pretty much in every aspect, you know, of this world.
If you became aware of a police officer involved, an active police officer involved in such a thing, what would your options be, Sergeant? Any?
Well, as long as he's not breaking any laws, Satanism is looked upon as an organized religion. You look at the Church of Satan, the Temple of Set, these are all organized satanic religions. And as long as they are not breaking any laws, there really isn't anything you can do about it.
I tell you, you wouldn't be out to partner up with somebody like that.
Well, put it this way, he wouldn't be driving me, I'll tell you that.
I understand. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Sergeant, it seems like you mentioned earlier in the show that you saw the CNN picture of the what looks like an evil entity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And did you see any other pictures of people who took that as well?
There were many.
There were many that took that and saw that they got that picture.
Yes, there were many. Did you just see
there? There's more to come. Once I get copies of these photographs, I will be giving them to Art so we can put them on the website. But you'll be amazed at some of the photographs that
I haven't seen any,
have taken.
Oh, you haven't seen any? Well,
no.
Take a trip to my website, get to a library or something, and take a look. It's pretty chilling stuff, so there'll be more as soon as we get them. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Excuse me, Art. Good morning. I have a couple of questions there for the sergeant. More along the lines of I'm very disturbed by what I'm hearing tonight and some of the misinformation that I feel like is going on out there. Mr. Sergeant, you had stated earlier tonight that demons enter the body through specific points, the solar plexus, some areas around the top of the head. Was that correct?
Yes.
If these are non-corporeal beings, non-physical beings, I believe we can agree that demons are spiritual, are they not?
Yes.
Then why do they need a specific point to enter the body?
Well, these are areas that your aura will flow in and out of. Your aura is your spiritual protection. And this is how the demonic spirit would most likely enter. And the way we know that is that during exorcism, there are certain parts of the body that are affected. Usually the head, the stomach. In one case that I handled, it was the back. And these pretty much were the areas that we knew that the demonic had entered through. So what we would do at that point, or the exorcist would do basically, is he would take a relic and he would apply it to that area. And that area causes extreme torment to the demonic spirit and hopefully will spur it to leave at that point. So that's why I talk about that. But certainly they are spirit and they do not have to enter at that point. It's just that through our experience, we find this to be true.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sergeant Ralph Sarchi. Hi.
Hi, this is Marcia from Sacramento.
Hello, Marcia.
Hi. I have kind of a serious question here. Many, many years ago, I was working one evening, and a man had come into where I was working and had ordered a glass of red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to collect his money, he took my hand, and he says, "Tell your mother we're watching over you." And, of course, I come back because I thought, who is this person? And in the end, he had given me a card that said, "Devil may care." And I've been fighting this for approximately 23 years. They've been working on me a lot. And I'm pretty strong. They've worked at my kids. I've been to them on senior. I've had protection around me and stuff. What bringing it up right now, yes, I was looking on your website.
Uh-huh.
Of this demon that they're showing. And I swear to God, that is the man. And it just hit me.
I understand.
This man has followed me many, many places I have moved. I started, this happened like in the Bay Area. I moved to Sacramento.
Well, it engenders, I'll tell you what, it engenders a pretty good question. We're pretty short on time here. But would a person possessed, or perfectly possessed, but possessed, seem to somebody like this lady, or anybody else who encountered them, to be, you know, from the devil? In other words, would they think they might have encountered the devil?
It's very likely, because what happens is, most of the time when you come into contact with pure evil, you'll react to it. It's such an unnatural, it's so opposite of humanity that your body will react to it. Usually, it would say, people describe it as a creepy feeling, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And that's pretty much the way it would be.
Exactly. So you would know you were in its presence. There would be no question about that. And you, as a just a sort of a average citizen, you might interpret that to be you just ran into the devil.
Well, you know, that depends on if the spirit wants you to recognize it. Most of the time they hide. They don't. They operate under the cover of darkness. Archbishop Fulton Sheen said, "The devil is most powerful when he is denied." That is one of his one of the ways that he operates, you know, in humanity. And you know, Father Martin definitely concurred with that. He said that was one of the greatest ploys that he ever pulled off, is that people actually deny his existence. So they will try to hide. They won't, they don't want to prove to other people that they do exist, because what is that going to do? It's going to put that person right into church.
That's right. Sergeant, we're out of time. Your book is fantastic. Beware of the Night. By the way, instead of the hundreds of thousands, you're now at 164 on Amazon.com. I don't know how to thank you for being here tonight. And I definitely want to thank everybody in the 46th for allowing you to be here, giving you the night off.
Thanks very much, Art. It was my pleasure.
Take care, my friend.
All right, you too.
Good night. Well, there you have it. It should set you to thinking a little bit, I expect. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.